So I think you're sleepy. You come back in an hour.
Need sleepy.
Please go away. Let me sleep for the love of God.
It's now time for the Billy C. Morning Show, part of the Billy C. Boxing Network. Interact with the show at BillyCBoxing.com.
And we're coming to you live from the Billy C. Studios in Lake George, New York. I'm Bill Caligiuri. It's time for the Billy C. Morning Show. Good morning to everybody. Glad you could be with us this morning. And, of course, we're glad to be with you. Today's show is being brought to you in part by Sal's Neighborhood Pizzeria, an Italian restaurant located on St. Simon's Island in Georgia. Check out the website. See why we talk so much about this delicioso food. www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com. Or give my man a call, 912-268-2328. 912-268-2328. Find out why. We're always talking about this. And speaking of finding out why, find out for yourself. Yeah, if you're heading south, I wish I certainly was right now, literally 15 minutes out your way off of I-95. That includes stopping for a couple of lights. So if you run the Reds, you get there even sooner. Check out the website for the address, www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com. Today's show is also being brought to us in part by my book, Tom Mono, From Bondage, The Baddest Man on the Planet, is available right now where all good books are sold. And you can get a copy of this book literally right now while you're watching or listening to the show. Just go to barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com. Find out why we got a 5-star rating across the board. And finally, today's show is being brought to us in part by Billy C's Carl Frampton Leo Santa Cruz post-fight show. And that would be the rematch, which is scheduled for this weekend. So make sure you tune it in here approximately 6 minutes after the fight is over and get our thoughts and, of course, call in so you can give us yours. A little shout out to everyone that's watching us on Fight TV. Love Fight TV, and we're glad to be part of Fight TV's programming. But the best part is you can watch or listen to this show on your handheld device. And if you haven't downloaded the app, do so right now, man. It's cool. I was watching the show. I normally don't re-watch the shows, but I was on Friday on the Fight TV app. And let me tell you, it's some good stuff. Crystal clear, and the sound is fantabulous. Download the app today. Fight.tv, that's FITE.TV/BillyC. Get the app for free forever and enjoy the show. And speaking of apps, don't forget about Fanfire. Go to fanfire.com/BillyCBoxing and find out what all the hubbub's about. New game that you can play, and it's for free, and you can win money, but you got to go to firefan.com/BillyCBoxing. Today I want to talk about a bunch of things, including the NFL, the championships, and the Super Bowl matchup is defined. We got some emails to read. We got some fight results. My main topic today really is the big fight scheduled for this weekend, Carl Frampton against Leo Santa Cruz. It's the rematch. The first fight was great. My question today, will the second fight live up to what the first fight did? I am a strong believer in rematches in the sport of boxing, something that the fighters of today don't seem to do as often as they should, especially when the first fight is an entertaining scrap. And I feel that rematches create rivalries and open up the doors for bigger and better things, and it's good for the fans. It's something that boxers seem to run away from these days, but that's par for the course. It seems like a lot of the younger people today run away from challenges, which is too bad. But the question today, Carl Frampton, Leo Santa Cruz 2, will the rematch be as great as the first fight? Joining me right now, he's a boxing Hall of Famer in the state of New Jersey. He's a Guinness Book of World Record holder. He's becoming a movie star. His head is so big that when he flies on an airplane now, they got to give him 3 seats, one for him and 2 for his head. And They actually got to throw him a fourth seat for the ego. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, please welcome Sal Rocky Senicola. What's up, Sal?
You're a funny guy, Billy C. I'm a very humble guy, and I'm just grateful I have some opportunities to do some of my skills in another way, cultivate some talent.
Humble guy. I heard you hired someone just to stir the milk in your coffee now. I mean, come on.
Come on. You know what? I can explain that, though. I mean, you know.
you can't go around and around with a spoon? What, bro? Anyway, Carl Frampton, Leo Santa Cruz, the rematch is scheduled for this weekend. We are going to be doing a post-fight show. The first fight was great. What's your thoughts on the rematch? Two questions. One, do you think that the rematch could be as good as the first fight? And two, are you as excited as I that these two guys are at least fighting each other, something that we both feel is important in boxing to create rivalries and excitement? Among not only the fighters, but the fans themselves. I mean, for some reason, today's fighter avoids a rematch like the plague. Even, you know, I could see it if the first fight wasn't good. But when a fight is good, and then next thing you know, like what just happened with Badu Jack moving up to avoid the rematch against James DeGale. I mean, what's your thoughts on the Santa Cruz Frampton rematch?
I think that's a great, great fight. I love the first fight. And, you know, Bill, I'm a big fan of rematches. And especially when you have two world-class fighters going at it, and they put on a great first fight. I think now, you know, we're going to definitely have a reason to be all into this this fight coming up. And, you know, I think that first fight, fighters get a good opportunity to train with a purpose, knowing that they already fought their opposition and knowing the fighter a little bit better. So each fighter has an equal advantage of trying to look at where their weaknesses were, their own weaknesses, and also their opponent's weaknesses. So the second fight could be as equal to the first fight as far as excitement and everything else. So we may see a subtle difference in dimension as far as how they're going to fight each other, but I think all in all, when the bell rings and they're trading the leather, you'll see a war of attrition here and a great, great fight. I'm really excited about this fight.
You know, I'm a big fan of both fighters, Frampton and Leo Santa Cruz. But Leo Santa Cruz, I've always enjoyed his style of fighting. And, you know, he's really, and you know how sometimes fighters talk smack in the press and stuff like that. But Leo Santa Cruz, I believe what's coming out of his mouth is true, and you know, I think it's going to be hard. To be honest with you, I think the pressure is more on Carl Frampton because Leo Santa Cruz is going to, if he didn't give it his all in the first one, which I'm sure he did, I just have a feeling he's going to step it up a notch. I'm not giving my official prediction, but Leo Santa Cruz seems to have. Seems to be fighting for more. I'm just wondering if Carl Frampton, you know, once you achieve what you set out to do as far as being a champion, etc., you know, does the wind get let out of your sails? Is there more drive for Leo Santa Cruz to get his old title back and to prove that he's a better fighter? I mean, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, a true champion, you know, he has that eye of the tiger. He doesn't lose it. He knows that not only did he finally climb and make it to the top, but he's got to turn it on and keep that intensity, keep the emotion and drive and the desire alive. And I think, you know, if you're a true champion, and hopefully we'll see Frampton is still trying to strive for perfection and trying to hone in on his skill level and improve where he's challenging himself now. So it's the inner fight that people will now drive to find out who he is realizing he is. And I think as long as he keeps that fire alive, you know, he should be challenging himself and pulling out the best every fight. That's how some fighters are made, you know?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. I'm looking forward to this fight big time, and we'll be talking about it this week. And if you're watching or listening and you have some thoughts on the Carl Frampton-Leo Santa Cruz rematch and you want to give us your thoughts, we'll read them on air. Just drop me an email, Billy@TalkinBoxing. That's TalkinBoxing. Otherwise, make sure you mark it down on your calendar to tune in here as soon as the fight is over on Saturday night and give us your thoughts then. Sal, we got a couple of emails to read, but first and foremost, let's talk about the NFL Championship weekend.
Oh, boy, I'm excited.
The Super Bowl matchup is set. In the NFC, the Falcons, the Atlanta Falcons, I think your buddy Max and my buddy really gave them the oomph to get them over the hump. I honestly was surprised how unstoppable the Atlanta Falcons seemed to be against the Packers on Sunday. The Falcons, in case you missed it, topped the Falcons 44-21. I'm sorry. The Falcons topped the what the fuck? I'm having a hard time. Here. The Atlanta Falcons topped the Green Bay Packers 44-21. The Falcons looked unstoppable in this game offensively, and I think, you know, I said on Friday, you know, the big difference here, which I was wrong. I picked the Packers to win the fight to win the game, but that's because I thought that the Packers defense would stop the Falcons offense, which they couldn't do, Sal. All game long, the Falcons were just marching up and down the field. And the funny thing about it was, if you look at the statistics of the game, Aaron Rodgers had a good game. He was completing some passes and looking pretty good doing it. It's just that the Packers D just couldn't stop. They had no answers for the Falcons offense. And it's going to be interesting as they move forward. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, my big concern with that game going into it was the fact that I think Atlanta was a younger team and maybe not quite as experienced. But, hey, here you go. You have the excitement, the anticipation, everything else of a great game. And, man, I'll tell you, Atlanta just shut them down like they were veterans, man. They just did a hell of a job. So kudos and hats off to my home team.
Now, the Falcons' job, so to speak, ain't over, because you know it ain't over till the fat lady sings. And the Falcons, well, they punched their ticket to the Super Bowl, and they'll be going up against the New England Patriots, who have been there many times before. The Patriots topped the Steelers 36-17 in another typical great game by Tom Brady. They shut down the Steelers, which I was kind of glad. You know, I said it, and I'll make no secrets about it. I you know, as far as the AFC is concerned, the two of my worst teams, the Patriots and the Steelers. But I was leaning towards the Patriots only because, you know, I don't have anything against the Patriots team. I think that the coaching staff and the players are all top-notch guys. The reason why I dislike them is because they beat the crap out of my team all the time. But the Steelers are a very unlikable team, in my opinion. I do not like Ben Roethlisberger. Forget about his, you know, personality on the field. He's just hard to like. So I'm very excited and glad the Patriots beat him 36-17, which sets up the Super Bowl in 2 weeks. Falcons against the Patriots. My question, and the big test is going to be, can the Falcons keep it up? I do believe, Sal, that the Falcons' high-potency offense is going to give the Patriots some trouble. You know, they seem to have a hard time stopping a fast-paced offense, and maybe this is the changing of the guard. Maybe the Falcons can continue their winning ways and upset the Patriots, because I'm sure the Patriots are going to go into this game. I haven't looked at the lines, but I'm sure they're going to go in as the favorite. I'm rooting for the Falcons in this one. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing the Falcons put a trounce on the Patriots. I don't know if they'll handle them as easily as they did Green Bay, but I think they definitely are in the game, pal. They're in the game to win. And I think they just got to stay well-grounded. Heck, that's funny. And stay in the game and not let the New England Patriots explode with their arsenal with offense or anything else. As long as their defense As long as their offense gets shut down by Atlanta's defense, it should be definitely a tight game. But I want to see Atlanta beat them. Definitely do.
I think it's going to boil down to who can handle the pressure of the Super Bowl. New England's been there many.
You have a young team in Atlanta, and you have the veterans that have been there, done that, including Brady. So, you know, that is going to be what we will have to definitely look to see as far as some good variables to consider.
Exactly. What I was starting to try to say was that the Patriots have been there many times before, especially with Tom Brady, and this is the first time for the Falcons. I don't believe anyone on that team has been to a Super Bowl, so it's going to be interesting to see how they handle the big event. So we got a couple of emails. We got Dax Khan scheduled to join us here in about 20 minutes or so. So let's get some emails. I got some fight results to talk about. I got a pretty humorous topic to talk about. So let's blow through these emails real quick. This one's from my man Johnston. And he says, hey, Billy C, I hope all is well. I just want to let you guys know that there was a decent night of boxing on ITV4, which is on, that's terrestrial television over in England. Robbie Davies put on, improved to 15-0. He's a fighter that he'll be keeping an eye on. He stopped Zoltan Szabo with a beautiful body shot in the ninth round. He said Szabo was tough and had never been stopped before. He also said that Jack Arnfield and Mick Hall was a great fight. He said good start for the ITV, although he won't, this is Johnston, he says he won't be paying for the Chris Eubank Reynolds Quinlan fight, which is on the ITV box office. They have made an awful mistake here, as the card isn't deep enough, and Eubank Jr. is fighting for the IBO super middleweight title, and that doesn't capture his imagination. I happen to like the IBO, and I wish they had more recognition in the boxing world, to be honest. But anyway, he says, especially against a guy that has only got an aging Daniel Giel on his record, plus David Hay is encouraging the British public to get their money out and pay for it. He says it's an absolute turnoff. He says he guesses that Eubank Jr. might end up on the Haymaker Ring Star stable sometime soon. Anyway, he sent an article, and I tell you, according to the article that Johnston sent me, ITV had avoided boxing for many years and decided to get back in the mix, and this was their first card, and I agree with Johnston that it was an entertaining scrap, several entertaining scraps on this card, I should say, aside from Robbie Davies stopping Zoltan in the ninth round, Zoltan Szabo. Jack Arnfield stopped Mick Hall in the 11th, and Zach Parker stopped Bradley Price, remember that name, in four rounds. So, good. I'm glad. Do you see it? Do you read it between any lines with that, Sal, that a TV network, a terrestrial TV similar to like our regular TV networks here in the States, decided to get back into mixes? Do you think there's a reason, underlying reason behind it? Is the interest level growing? I mean, I've always said that the boxing in England carries the sport on their back.
Well, they seem to. I mean, they've always been the underlying force that has proven through the decade that they're here to stay. And I hope they have a good business plan and model here that maybe they could become more of an item than what they're just evolving from right now.
My man Brett from Canada says,
yes.
Hey, Billy C and Sal, I hope you guys had a great weekend. Just wanted to say how small the world is. At my factory, there's a Cuban who started a few months ago named Ali. I got to talking to him last week and asked him if he ever heard of Erslandy Lara. He smiled big and said not only does he know him, but they went to the same school together and they were from the same neighborhood. Well, it gets even better than that. He said Ali said they walked to school together until another student transferred to their school. The other student had a car and used to pick the two of them up every day. Like Lara, he was on the national boxing team. Guess who it was? He says, that's right, Guillermo Rigondeaux. And Ali was telling me this before I could even mention Rigondeaux's name, so I knew that he wasn't BSing me. He was pretty happy to hear that I followed the sport and knew who his fellow countrymen are. I told him about the Lara Foreman fight and where to go to watch it. It was a total surprise. Keep up the great work. That is pretty cool, man. They end up in Canada, huh?
Wow.
You know, Canadians were always able to get the Cuban cigars. We weren't over here.
That's right. That's funny.
We got another one. This is from my man Chris from Canada. We got the Canadian connection today. He says, good morning, guys. Oscar has recently stated that the Triple G fight might not happen in 2017. The reasoning behind it is that he said that the fight with between Canelo Alvarez and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. has the potential to be so good, according to De La Hoya, that there will be a trilogy. He says, let me hear Billy C. rant and Sal laughing in the background.
That's what I'm doing.
I tell you something, man. Look, my respect for Saul Canelo Alvarez. And I said this last week. I totally think for anybody that believes that the fight between, Saul Canelo Alvarez and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is going to be a blowout, I really disagree. I do think it's going to be a better fight than people are anticipating. However, I've lost a lot of respect, and I know you have too, Sal, for Canelo Alvarez for blatantly ducking Triple G. I really applaud Triple G and especially Daniel Jacobs for having the balls to step in the ring with Triple G. And I think that Triple G is making a huge statement here. The main statement is he doesn't need Canelo Alvarez. And I like that better because as far as I'm concerned, Canelo Alvarez, despite, I will say it again, I think the Chavez Jr. Canelo Alvarez fight will be a good one. But I clearly think Canelo's taken the easiest path. And it really bothers me because my biggest knock on Floyd Mayweather was cherry picking. And now I get to say the same thing about Canelo.
Well, that's what it appears to be. And like you said, I think the fight should be a decent fight, but it's not the fight that I think a lot of fans were hoping to see.
Some fights this weekend will get you caught up on the main ones. A good one on Friday night, the main event out of Atlantic City. Daniel Roman improved to 22 wins, 2 losses, and a draw when he won the WBA title eliminator against Adam Lopez, who drops his first fight of his career. He's now 16-1-1. After 9 rounds of a pretty good fight, finally the fight was stopped at 3 minutes of the 9th round. After the fight, Lopez, after the round, Lopez was kind of staggering to his corner. Harvey Dock had the doctors come in and they stopped it. Prior to that, I thought that the fight would have been stopped. Harvey Dock gave Lopez more than enough time to get his you-know-what together. I thought it would have been justified if he waved it off. Daniel Roman was just opened up a can of whoop-ass on this guy. And it was a very entertaining scrap. So if you missed it, try and watch that one. At the end of the fight, Roman said, I thought I was going to knock him out in the 4th round. That was the round that he dropped him twice. And I don't know what kept Lopez up. I thought he was going to go down a third time, but he didn't. He says, I just ran out of time. He was saved by the bell. I did what I told everyone I was going to do, but I'm going to relax now. Now I got to prepare for my world title shot against Neomar Cermino. Another fight of note, the Ronald Ellis and Christopher Brooker fight, wasn't that exciting to me. Unanimous decision Ronald Ellis got. 77-75 and 79-73 twice to improve to 13-0 with a draw. Christopher Brooker got his drop to 11-3 with 5 knockouts. He seemed like he thought he won the fight. I say nay. But in a pretty good fight, and I know you did some research on Kenneth Sims Jr., a well-decorated amateur. He fought Emmanuel Robles. In a knock-em-out, drag-out fight, I said on Friday, Emmanuel Robles is a tough guy, and he certainly hung in there. It seemed to me after a while that Kenneth Sims might have run out of gas. Robles really took everything he could. It stayed on his feet. It went to the cards. But at the end, the way the judges scored it, 78-73, and two of them had it 79-72, in favor of Kenneth Sims Jr. He's now 11-0 with three knockouts, and Robles drops to 15-2-1 with five knockouts. You would have never thought these guys weren't known for their knockout punches because, man, from the opening bell, they started going after each other. Very exciting fight. And finally, another one I wanted to mention, Stephen Young of St. Louis improved to 16-0 with three draws when he scored a unanimous decision over a late sub, Olamah John Nazarov, which gave him everything he could handle to lose a decision. Nazarov drops to 14-8. The way the judges scored it, 77-75, 78-74, twice. So that's what took place. And Saturday, Zab Judah got back in the ring after a while off, almost 3 years. He improved to 43-9 with 30 knockouts when he won a unanimous decision over Jorge Miyunga, who drops to 13-8. And another guy making a comeback, Patrick Nelson, fought in Denmark. He improved to 29-1 he went the distance. Zab Judah stopped his opponent in the second round. Patrick Nelson went the distance I'm having a bad day today, Sal. Maybe too many. BB Barocal dropped to 17-4 when he went 10 with Patrick Nelson. So, and by the way, Patrick Nelson was fighting in the light heavyweight division. So, I have a bit of comical relief for you, Sal. Gilberto Mendoza is the WA president, and he said on Friday afternoon that the WBA is continuing their full-blown commitment to only having one single WBA champion in each division. He says, it's not easy to clean the house, but we're doing everything possible. Most insiders know that an interim title for fighters get approved, but we're trying to clean that up. I was a little confused because I give Mendoza a lot of credit for trying to get rid of it. So I went to their website. Now, I don't know how updated the WBA website is, Sal.
Right.
I went to the WBA's website and looked at their current champions. And I did this yesterday. So on January 22nd, in 2017, I went to the WBA website, which was 2 days after Mendoza said that they're still trying to clean up the division. And of the 17, their sanctioning body, so they only have one champion in every division. So 17 weight classes, you would assume that there's 17 champions, right?
That's correct.
Well, in the WBA only, they have, in the 17 weight classes, 11 of them have super champions. 17, so every single one of their divisions has a regular world champion. And 10 of them have interim world champions. So out of all of the champions in 17 weight classes right now, just in the WBA, Sal, 38 WBA world champions, and this is one sanctioning body. And we wonder why we can't follow who the champion is. 38 world champions in 17
world champions in one sanctioning body times. What do we have? Five now.
We could count five. Of the majors, right? Five. So 38 times five. What?
You and I just started one.
That's what I'm saying. 38 times five. Even if you go 30 times five, that's 150 fighters on the planet that could be walking around claiming they're a world champion. And for any of you young fans out there that think that championships are good for boxing, I would love to have you send me an email explaining. Why? I think it's a complete joke. And speaking of a joke, I've always said that David Haye is a joke. I mean,
few times I've heard you say that.
Few, And that's to put it lightly, a few. And not only do I feel that he's a joke inside the ring, I really believe that he's been a joke outside of the ring as well. And I honestly don't understand how the Brits put up with this guy and why they even listen to him and back him and everything else. Well, speaking of backing him, we talked about it briefly on Friday, but it's signed, sealed, and delivered. Apparently, Richard Schaefer and his new promotional company called Ringstar is basically joining forces with David Hayes Haymaker Promotions to promote boxing in England, and they call it Haymaker Ringstar. The first fight that's going to be taking place between the two will be David Hayes' own fight against Tony Bellew, which is a joke of a fight to begin with. Tony Bellew is a world champion in the WBC in the cruiserweight division, and I'm sure that the WBC is going to have to, strip him of his title. But David Hayes said the joint venture with Haymaker Ringstar will send shockwaves through the British boxing. Together, we're creating a new kind of promotions entity. I have no doubt that Haymaker Ringstar will become UK's leading promotional company. Richard Schaefer says, I'm delighted to be partnering with David Hay. The UK is a great market, exciting fighters, passionate fans, and we're determined to work with the most talented boxers to give the fights what the fans want to see. What's your thoughts on this merger?
Well, you know, we've seen so many potential items in this world of boxing that promise to be the real deals and do things. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, at this point, Bill, we got to give them a shot and see if they're going to be some force that could be good for the game and try to get some big fights under the radar to come on top of the radar. So let's see what happens. I got to give them a shot. But you know me, I think, you know, you try to dilute the pool with more and more people, meaning the weak ones will drown and the strong ones will survive and be a force to reckon with every day.
Well, you know, Richard Schaefer, I'm not going to say anything really bad about him. He's a good businessman. No. And, you know, I'm curious to see how he moves forward and who his alliances are. And this first alliance with David Hay is strike one as far as I'm concerned. David Hay, to me, is a complete clown. I think he's one of the most overrated boxers in the history of the sport. Yes, he was a world cruiserweight champion, but he ducked a big fight, went up to the heavyweight division, never accomplished shit in the heavyweight division, really. He never did. Yes, he won a title. I still don't think he beat Nikolai Valuev to win that title. But all he's been is a bullshit artist, smokescreen. He's a fraud. David Hay is a fraud. And his fight against Tony Bellew, obviously they're both making some money, but I just don't get it. You know, the British boxing fans are knowledgeable. They're, very loyal to their sport. I thought they were an intelligent group. And for them to buy into this bullshit from David Hay, I just don't get it. But anyway, here's an interesting fact. Boxing in Thailand for this upcoming year, there's a lot of fights scheduled already beginning Wednesday with a world minimum weight title. Then in March, there's a couple other ones followed by several title fights in March. So we'll be keeping our eyes on the fight scene in Thailand. I'm glad to see things shaping up on a worldwide level. And speaking of shaping up, Sal, the WBC, one of my biggest hang-ups, I was criticizing them, no disrespect to Jose Suleiman, but, you know, he's been gone now several years, and they still, parade him around and, whatever. I mean, hey, more power to him. My one knock on the WBC is that they kind of act like they are the sport of boxing and nothing else exists. But they really went out and slapped Angel Garcia, Danny Garcia's father, on the wrists They put a letter out saying that the WBC was extremely concerned with the behavior and actions showcased by Mr. Angel Garcia, who's the trainer of WBC welterweight world champion Danny Garcia, during the press conference for the anticipated fight between Garcia and Keith Thurman. The WBC prides itself for its battle against apartheid in South Africa, which was banned for boxing for 19 years. And our constant rejection to any sort of discrimination and abuse of power. The WBC condemns the foul language and discriminatory threats and dangerous actions which could have led to a riot and personal injuries during the presentation. Apparently, Angel Garcia used the N-word and was sending many profanity-laced insults to... Keith Thurman during the promotion of their upcoming fight. What do you think?
Well, that sounds interesting. I don't know. I didn't hear too much about that on either side, so I just want to see the guys get in the ring and do the fight, that's all.
Yeah, I think...
That's bad. When you get into that, like you and I say, so there's no need for that. Let's just keep it all on the up and clean.
Now, I think race relations in this country are at an all-time low. Or actually on an all-time high, depending upon how you look at it, it's bad. It's at an all-time negative for a lot of stupid reasons and uneducated reasons. You know, we don't need our sports people, especially in this sport, which gets enough, negativity surrounding it to start, being racial motivated. I mean, that's one of the things I like about this sport. Nobody cares when you're fighting in the ring. Nobody cares what color you are, what your religious beliefs are, what nationality you are, etc. And I really don't think there's room for it. Just like I don't think there was any room for all these protests about our new president. I mean, listen, if the protests were, and I don't mean to get in, jump off topic, but, I respect everybody's opinion, but what I really don't understand is why everybody's knocking President Trump right now. He hasn't done anything yet. I would be totally supportive of protests and all the negativity if, you know, they were taking place 6 months from now, 2 months from now, even a month from now, when you have some data. Right now, all you're going by is things he said for a campaign, and they're not. He hasn't done any of the negative stuff. I mean, all these high-power... entertainers and people, I mean, you know, actually saying we miss Obama. I mean, listen, Barack Obama was an extremely nice guy, well-spoken, etc. But he was terrible as a leader. His problem is he wasn't a good decision maker, and he couldn't get people to approve some of the things he wanted to do. And from a national, international picture, we're laughing stock. You know, so we need to get that back together. I mean, you know, I think we talk about it on the show, but I think that whole mentality of participation trophies, I think that's a good analogy, you know, where we want no one to lose anymore. You know, little Johnny and little Freddie and little Joey all gets the participation trophy when, you know, little Johnny and little Freddie are out picking daisies in the outfield and, you know... listen, that's not what the real world is about. You know, we can't shovel it under the carpet. And I think a lot of the movement by the youth today is just, it's just showing that they don't know what the hell they're talking about.
No, I know. I will say this. And President Obama had 8 years to try to really build a legacy, including the fact that he could have tried in so many ways and efforts to heal the race relations in this country or to bring it all together. I think it was just the opposite that occurred. And for the life of me, I just don't understand how that wasn't a recognizable facet that he should have developed and gone down to try to help heal our racial tensions and opposite system of thinking and prejudices. It just should have. I think he could have done more for that.
He did. He made it worse. His wife Michelle Obama, I hope she crawls back under a rock or wherever she came from and never comes back. Why the press referred to her as a beautiful woman, I don't know. She's, you know, listen, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I respect it. But she's one of the ugliest things I've ever seen. She didn't even smile at the inauguration. And to me, it showed that she has no class. She's a sore loser. Their time, they came and went. They not only won the first president election, but they won the rematch, so to speak. And you know, you only get 8 years. You know, see ya, you know, right off into the sunset. Don't return, Michelle, because you are one sad sack bitch. That's all I can say. Nothing personal, but anyway. Carl Frampton, Leo, let's get back on the boxing quickly.
I saw one face smiler. It was Bill Clinton.
Did you see the video? One of these women.
He looked like he was smiling. He looked like a periscope. I mean, he.
Do you know what there's all kinds of videos out, but he was sitting there and he's staring. Now listen, anybody that can see out of two eyes knows that Ivanka Trump is a hot number. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And she's an intelligent young woman, and a lot of people are saying that she's really the first lady. You know, she's going to be in the White House with her father, etc. But Bill Clinton was smiling at her and making googly eyes during the speeches, and all of a sudden you see the video of him staring at her, and then friggin' Hillary turns around and gives him a look like, "Are you kidding me? Right here,
Are you doing this now?
Yeah,
you really think we have not been through enough and you're doing this now?"
Oh man. Hey, listen, anybody that thinks that Trump is you know, as bad as some of these people are making him out, you know, he didn't have to give the accolades he did to Hillary Clinton, and it garnered a standing ovation for Hillary at the luncheon on Friday. And you know, I really believe in, and you know, one thing I want to say, you know, I've heard a lot of things, but both pro and a lot of negative things about Donald Trump. But I heard this one expert say, and it really hit home, because I believe that's going to be the key with his success or failure as a president. You know, all the things that he said, you know, a lot of Americans wanted to hear it. But the one thing for sure that one of these experts had said was this. He said that Donald Trump has a tendency and the knack for being able to go into a meeting or a room and getting people to agree with him or do what he wants them to do, whether it's bullying tactics or whether it's couth or whatever it is. And I think that ability for him to be able to do that, to get people to vote for his plans and stuff and approve his plans, both Republican and Democrat, is going to be the key to his success. If he can pull it off, he's going to be a very successful president. If he can't, he's going to go away in 4 years. That's what I think.
Well, there's the art of the deal. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's true. Joining us right now is my man Dax Khan to tell us his thoughts on the big fight this weekend, which incidentally we're going to be doing our post-fight show. What's up, Dax?
Good morning, everyone.
How you doing? Big fight. Before we talk about the Carl Frampton-Leo Santa Cruz rematch, you know, it's one of these fights, Dax, and I said it earlier in the show, that I love the fact that we're getting a rematch. It was a really good fight the first time around, and it garnered a rematch. And it seems that in today's sport of boxing, in 2017, rematches are far and few in between, and fighters come up with all kinds of reasons not to have a rematch. And even if their fight is good, now don't get me wrong, I don't think that fight should automatically garner a rematch, but if the first fight was entertaining and tight and exciting, just like Frampton Leo Santa Cruz 1 was, it definitely garners a rematch. These two guys agreed on it very quickly. It's here this weekend. What's your thought first on the rematch aspect?
Well, we need rematches in boxing, because that's what actually, you know, it's the rematches people remember. You know, people will talk about a single bout 20, 30 years from now, but the rematch is what makes history. I had a conversation with somebody this weekend who asked me, you know, with the football playoffs coming on, and they were asking me, saying, you know, well, why do you only pay attention to boxing, you know, primarily? You know, what do you think is so much better about that sport than any other sport? And I referred to the fact that I believe Sunday was the anniversary of the last bout between Roberto Duran and Esteban de Jesus. I said, you know, when you follow boxing, you get to meet, you know, even if you don't meet these guys, you get to see their lives, you know, on a whole different level, unlike with other sports. And then you get to follow, and you get to relate with these guys because, you know something, you see how they are inside the ring and outside the ring. And I told him the story about how when De Jesus, after he left boxing, he retired a few years later, he went to prison, battled drug addiction, he caught AIDS due to that drug addiction, he was pardoned, and Roberto Duran, at a time when people would not even go into a room if they suspected somebody had AIDS, this is a man who went there, I mean, this beast inside the ring, known for being ferocious, you know, took his former foe, his rival, and actually, you know, embraced him and hugged him and kissed him, you know, and told his daughter, you know, kiss your father. You know, these are the things that separate this sport from anywhere. And if you have more stuff like with Oscar De La Hoya talking about, oh, we're going to have Canelo and we're going to have Chavez and that could be a trilogy, you know something, that would have been great if you would have did it when the guys were relevant and you're avoiding these other things and you're not having these trilogies or even rematches like you should. Great example, Badu Jack and James DeGale. Another great example would be Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev. So without these mega fights having these rematches, you know what? It gets lost, it gets forgotten, and, you know, part of the sport gets forgotten.
You know, a great point, because Jack DeGale clearly should be a rematch, especially since it ended in a draw. And, you know, they're saying, oh, well, you know, Badu Jack can't make weight, you know, which he's never had a problem making weight, at least that I don't recall. And I'm sure he could have, you know, gotten down to the 168 limit one more time for a rematch. I just think that there's an underlying story, like they already have him lined up for a money fight against Adonis Stevenson or someone else, or even Andre Ward, and it's all about the money. And as far as Andre Ward is concerned, they had a rematch clause. And this is a guy that's pussying out, that's taking the easy route. It's a shame. You know, no other sport fleeces the fans as much as boxing. And we wonder why everyone, every chance they get, says, oh, boxing's dead, boxing's dead. I mean, there's just not enough fighters that are willing to fight. What Canelo is doing, avoiding Triple G, is a travesty in the sport of boxing. I do believe, and I've said it several times even today, that the Chavez Jr. and Canelo fight will be more entertaining than people think. But still, the fight that people want to see is Triple G against Canelo. And Daniel Jacobs, he steps in, he grows the hairs on his balls to fight Triple G. Maybe this will be a trilogy that we'll see. Maybe Daniel Jacobs surprises guys like me and puts on a good fight and challenges Triple G. And maybe this is the guy that we need to help save the sport. A guy like Daniel Jacobs, who's not only a quality fighter, but he's a feel-good story too.
And he's pushed for. He pushed for this fight, and he has for a while. Unfortunately, with Danny Jacobs, yes, he is a great feel-good story, but, you know, take him or even Anthony Durrell. What kind of kills them around fans, even, you know, the ones that are just starting to tune in, is when they're fighting, all you hear, and this is not to as somebody who had cancer himself, though, you know this, you know, this isn't to take away, you know, from what they went through, but, you know, when you're watching the fight and every single round you're hearing four or five times about their cancer survivor, it kind of gets people like, you know, well, what is this? You know, it's not just the fighters, it's everything around that that's really killing it. And when these rematches, trilogies don't happen, these guys really, these fighters are really losing the opportunity to gain a spot in history. You know, Arturo Gatti and Mickey Ward, not the most elite-level guys, but their trilogy is going to be known and remembered. You know, Marco Antonio Barrera and Eric Morales, Raul Marquez and Israel Vasquez, Rafael Marquez and Israel Vasquez, just to name a few of the most recent ones. So, you know, these are just the things that are hurting these guys. you know, themselves. You know, it's about the money right now. It's not about the long term. Now, you talk about circuses. You mentioned over about Richard Schaefer and David Haye joining together at Ringstar Promotions. David Haye, always talking. There's a guy, Bill. When does he ever follow through with these names he calls out? You know what's going on here? Anthony Joshua's coming to the United States this week, according to Eddie Hearn. He's going to do a promotion work to kind of build up more interest, not only for himself here, but for the Vladimir Klitschko and his fight coming in a couple months. Now, all of a sudden, Richard Schaefer and David Haye are joining forces, and it's Ringstar Promotions, David Haye's Ringstar Promotions. If you ask me, you know what just happened there? In my opinion, David Haye Richard Schaefer joining together, you know, it's like boxing contracted herpes and cancer at the same time. Richard Schaefer being the cancer and David Haye being the herpes, you know, the gift that keeps on giving. But you know what? I don't want your gift anymore.
Yeah, I hear you. David Haye is a total bullshit artist, and he's never, you're right, he's never come through. He wouldn't even fight Shannon Briggs. But one thing I want to just add to the Daniel Jacobs thing is, you know, Daniel Jacobs is the first guy, in my opinion, in a long time, who's really challenging himself. And he believes his own press clippings, he believes he's the best middleweight in the world, and he's putting his beliefs where his mouth is. And he's challenging himself, and he's fighting Triple G. Now here's the thing. To anyone that thinks that, you know, he just jumped on ship and took the fight, that's not true. He negotiated very strongly, and he got the money that they were looking for. So I don't disagree with the money aspect. And we've talked about that all the time. You know, fighters, you know, they want money and everything else. But the truth of the matter is you have to ask and try to negotiate for realistic money. You know, don't come out and say, hey, I'll fight so-and-so, and you know, when the fight is worth $100,000 and you're asking for $10 million, then you go on out in the press and say, oh, they wouldn't fight us, they backed away from, you know, not telling the whole story. That's not the full story. So I commend Daniel Jacobs for taking this fight, and I hope that this fight lives up to half of what I hope it does, and we'll be winners on this one. But anyway,
I'm all for fighters making as much money as they possibly can and going through those negotiations, as long as your intention is to fight.
Exactly.
You know, of course, exactly. We do have no need to get into detail. A lot of guys out there that just use that as a smokescreen, not to stay on David Haye, but for example, you know, his fight coming up with Tony Bello, you spoke about the WBC before and WBA. You know, the WBC, here's another opportunity for them to gain a sanctioning fee. With the interim title between Marco Hawk and Marius Bader coming up because of the Haye Bello fight. The WBA, at least they are trying to make somewhat of an attempt here. You know, they have a lot of good fights coming up in the spring. We have this weekend's Frampton versus Santa Cruz, the Golovkin versus Jacobs fight we just discussed, Keith Thurman versus Danny Garcia, Jorge Linares versus Anthony Corolla, and of course, Klitschko versus Joshua's coming up. So, you know, the WBA, at least they're producing something, and hopefully when these are done, those other titles that they keep saying they want to get rid of might happen, considering that any one of those names mentioned, no matter who wins on each side, is relevant enough and has proven themselves enough to be considered the only champion. There's no reason to have an interim or super or anything else.
Well, according to the WBA website yesterday, of the 17 weight classes, they have 38 WBA world champions, whether it be a world champion, a super champion, or an interim champion. So they need to step up their cause to try to get rid of the BS belts. But give us your thoughts as we're off topic here. Give us your thoughts on the big fights coming up this weekend. Carl Frampton, Leo Santa Cruz, the return of Mikey Garcia, all that stuff. What do you think?
We'll start out with Mikey Garcia first, since, you know, that kind of relates to what we were just speaking about. Big fan of Mikey Garcia. We know he's a great talent. How? In his second fight after a two-year layoff, and his first fight back was against nobody nobody in the ratings, nobody that would put him back into the ratings, and now he's fighting for a world title against Dijon. You know, I think that Mikey Garcia, based on the size and his power and quality of opposition, even with the layoff, I think Mikey Garcia wins this one. You know, he looks huge when they stand face-to-face. He does have that 3-inch height advantage. I believe he has an inch or two reach advantage. And that long rest that Mikey Garcia has had, even though he never took any abuse inside the ring, but the long rest out of there and rejuvenating himself and deciding, you know what, I still want to continue my career, that's going to be the difference here. You know, so I really don't think it's going to be much of a challenge for Mikey Garcia. Look for it to be a lot like Terrence Crawford and Victor Postal, if it even lasts that long.
You know, one thing I want to add to your comment about how he can fight for a world title, and I agree with you, Dax. I'm a big fan of Mikey Garcia. But, you know, this is my whole point about world championships. Now, I like the computer-generated rankings because they base it on statistics. They base who won against so-and-so and who so-and-so fought and won, et cetera, et cetera. And at the end, it spits out who they feel is the number one guy and so on and so forth. Forget about whose title they have or anything else. Well, on those two fights, unlike the Leo Santa Cruz and Carl Frampton fight, which has the number one guy against the number two guy, which incidentally is exactly what we want in unification fights, for that title that you just mentioned, that you aren't so sure Mikey Garcia deserves a shot, Mikey Garcia is ranked in that weight class, which incidentally he's ranked in a bigger weight class than his opponent. He's ranked at number 11. So he's not even in the top 10. And his opponent, ranked in a lower weight class, one weight class lower, is ranked number 21. So my question is how can, I agree with Dax 100%, how can these two guys be fighting for a world title when they're not even in the top 10 of either division?
That's my point, you know, how? I don't get it, and those are the things that really hurt boxing. You know, it's all you can really say about it, and just shake your head, you know, it's, you know, you have that term, you know, where everybody's always on the internet using, you know, SMH, you know, I just SMH on that, and there's nothing else you can say. But also, you know, another fight on that card that, you know, the Leo Santa Cruz and the Carl Frampton fight, a lot of people, as they look on social media, you know, a lot of the, even Santa Cruz fans are kind of rolling with Carl Frampton. I have to say, unless Leo Santa Cruz has drastically changed his style, I agree, as you stated before, he has a lot to fight for. He wants that title back. I do know that, you know, the thing with his father's motivating him, you know, his father's illness and that. But unless Leo Santa Cruz, in my opinion, has drastically changed, this fight isn't going to be any different than the first. And in fact, I think Carl Frampton might win this a little bit easier. You know, he's busier. He moves his feet well. Leo Santa Cruz is very busy with his hands, but his footwork is not, you know, exactly what dazzles you. So I think Carl Frampton's going to outwork him. He's going to avoid staying inside with Leo Santa Cruz. He's going to keep Leo Santa Cruz turning all night, and he's going to, you know, win a comfortable decision in this one, I believe.
You know, and Sal, I want to ask you, you know, Leo Santa Cruz has developed, you know, they call it a hitch in your swing if you're playing baseball, so we'll refer to it as a hitch in his arsenal. He's got a real bad habit of moving his hand before he punches. He kind of shakes it back and forth. And at first, you know, you could say, well, maybe it's a defensive you know, or an offensive, I don't know, it's something he does to confuse his opponent, not knowing when the punch is going to come, but I think it actually hurts himself, because he's got to stop that twitch before he delivers a punch, similar to Curtis Stevens when he developed that toe. He taps his toe, you know, while he's fighting, but before he lets his hands go. You know,
Alan Green looked at his shoelace every single time he's going to punch.
You know, and it's just like when fighters develop these kinds of terrible habits, I mean, isn't it easier to read them, or does an opponent get sucked up looking at it, you know, looking at the toe tap, looking at the glove going back and forth, looking at Alan Green, looking at his laces? I mean, who's got the advantage here?
Well, when the cat's out of the bag, and you know it, I mean, you can use it to your advantage, finding that kind of opponent that's looking at that. So, like I said, if it was a subtle thing, once in a while, you do it for a haymaker, you do whatever you got to do, you can get away with it. But I think if it's an every
we're losing Sal.
I was just gonna say, you still there, Sal?
No, he's
the other guy. Another fight in that court, Lee Selby versus Jonathan Barrios. You know, Barrios has had a solid 4 years. His last loss, in fact, was to Mikey Garcia back in 2012. Barrios, his only losses have come to Mikey Garcia, Yuriorkis Gamboa, when Gamboa was undefeated, Celestino Caballero, when Caballero was really a major player, and Juan Carlos Salgado. Lee Selby, his last loss was in 2009, but he's not a dynamic fighter. He's slick, he uses the ring to his advantage, he has almost no power. He's a featherweight version of Paulie Malignaggi. He never fought out of the comforts of home, so I'm going to have to pick Jonathan Barrios in that one.
Yeah, that's another good one. That's another good one, I think.
The card of the weekend, Bill, in my opinion, is going to be the Francisco Vargas against the Miguel Burchill fight and the Takashi Miura versus Miguel Roman fight. I believe that card is going to be dynamic into terms where the excitement is going to be pay-per-view worthy.
Wow, that's a pretty heavy statement. I wasn't so sure on that fight.
Well, you think about this. You know, Francisco Vargas, arguably the most exciting fighter in boxing. You know, not the most skilled fighter, but you know, he has a granite chin. He's a better he's a better boxer than giving credit for. But you know, he has that, you know, that come at you, stand in there, and make you trade style. You know, his war with Orlando Salido is going to be one of those fights that we spoke about before. Should they fight again, you know, that's going to be a great trilogy no matter who wins. You know, he has wins over Will Thompson. He has a win over Takashi Miura. And you know, Orlando Salido are his last three opponents. Now, Miguel Burchill, he's young, he's strong, he's fast. He's undefeated. He has a deceptive resume. Surian Tatakun is the best name on his resume, even though he's most known, really, just for going the distance with Vasyl Lomachenko. I think Vargas is going to be in trouble early. I think we're going to see him get bloodied up and battered, but then the fight is going to go on, and Vargas is going to drown him, and we're going to see a war for however long that lasts. But, you know, really, that fight is going to be from start to stop. It's going to be exciting, and I can almost guarantee one of those guys are getting knocked out.
Huh. That's going to be tough because we're going to be doing the Leo Santa Cruz post-fight show, and that fight's going to be on around the same time, so obviously we won't be able to watch them all. But
The co-feature, Bill, is significant because it is Takashi Miura against Miguel Roman, another guy in the division.
Yeah, no. That's what I like about HBO's broadcast. They seem to have relative and relevant fights versus you know, some of the other networks. Now, I can't say that about Showtime this weekend because they have those two big fights on, you know, with Santa Cruz and Frampton rematch and Mikey Garcia taking on Zalakin. So ought to be interesting. Any final thoughts, Zach? Dax?
Yeah, final thoughts on this is also, you know, we speak about how boxing overseas is kind of taking over, and you mentioned the Angel Garcia incident before. You know, how he's getting that slap on the wrist. Everybody, including the fans, are asking, you know, what should be done? Angel's rants about Muslims and blacks and other people, you know, that was just totally uncalled for. You know, they were hate words. Or more or less, if it was done in a certain situation, could be considered hate crimes. What about Nysak, who's supposedly the hammer of boxing who tolerates nothing? Why are they not putting their foot down and doing something a little more instead of just setting back and just, you know, letting everything take place? Where's the Nysak voice?
I agree with you. I agree with you. You know, these guys have taken the art of promotion and the Ali copycat, which they all try to do now, to a level which is stupid, really. I mean, I can't say it any different, but I agree with you.
And what about this lineup just announced today over in the UK coming up in the spring to kind of rival those WBA fights that we were speaking about before? Terry Flanagan is going to take on Peter Petroff, Liam Smith against Liam Williams, Bradley Skeet versus Shane Singleton, Tommy Langford, Craig Cunningham, Tyrone Nurse, Joe Hughes, Josh Warrington, Mark McCullough. You know, these fights are all coming up within the next couple months, you know. So the UK, everything that it seems the United States is doing over here, the UK is staying one step ahead by just answering back with just as or even a better card.
The UK has carried the boxing on its back for a long time. Their fighters are not afraid to fight each other. They're not afraid to have a loss. They certainly don't duck anyone. And they're the first opponents that fighters look for when they're looking for a tough guy that's willing to come over here and fight. So you can't say anything negative about the UK fighters at all. You know, they carry this. If it wasn't for the UK, we wouldn't be talking about this sport anymore, really.
Absolutely agree. And you know what? Everybody is always that quick buck that seems to be the topic where these fights aren't getting made, these trilogies aren't getting made because of this quick buck, and then you have legacies that aren't happening. Right now, what people should be speaking about is that kid that I spoke to you about the other day, Joseph Landeros. We have a former, you know, not an Olympian, but, you know, a national amateur, 15 years old now. He's a pro. He's undefeated down in Mexico. You know something? You would think that the media and promoters would all be jumping on that because, you know, you have potential here for a future star. 15 years old. He's fighting grown men. He's a former amateur. He's undefeated. You know, that is the type of age where, you know, you build superstars and you build legends instead of just sitting there trying to recycle what's already established and make that quick buck. That's how the sport evolves into the future.
You're right. Hey, great job. We'll look forward to you next later in the week, my man.
All right, everybody. Enjoy your day.
Take care. That's Dax Khan. You can check out his column up on BillyCBoxing.com. And he's always he's always thorough, Dax. So read his articles and tune in to him. He's got his segment on Monday. And speaking of segments, we are going to be looking into a new segment that we're going to be doing with Dax, and so stay tuned for that. It's an interaction segment with you guys, so it's basically called Behind the Numbers, and Dax will be starting that in the next week or so. So I wanted to just give a shout out to my man Sal. Apparently we're having trouble getting to him. He's lost connection, so Sal, if you're listening, or if you go back and listen, we're sorry we lost you. I tried getting you back several times, and to no avail. So we apologize for that inconvenience. But on this day, January 23rd in 1908, Harry Lewis knocks out Frank Mantell in the third round to win the world welterweight title. It took place in New Haven, Connecticut. On this day in 1968, Howard Winstone knocks out Mitsurni Siki in the ninth round to win the vacant British World Featherweight title, and that took place in London. If you recall, Howard Winstone was a blast from the past, and speaking of blasts from the past, next show, Wednesday, our blast from the past will feature Boxing Hall of Famer and former world champion Salvador Sanchez. So make sure you tune in for that. On this day in 1964, Pone Kingpetch wins a 15-round decision over Horiyuki Ibarra to regain the world flyweight title, took place in Bangkok. On this day in 1931, Jackie Kidd Berg wins a 10-round decision over Goldie Hess to retain his NBA World Junior Welterweight title, took place in Chicago. On this day in 1969, Bob Foster knocks out Frankie DiPaola in the very first round to retain his WBC and WBA World Light Heavyweight titles, and that took place at Madison Square Garden in New York City. A lot of controversy surrounding this fight and the fact that Frankie DiPaola was even allowed to fight Bob Foster for a world title. And finally, on this day, January 23rd, 1967, Emil Griffith wins a 15-round decision over Joey Archer to retain his WBA World and WBC World middleweight titles, and that too took place at Madison Square Garden in New York City. Hey man, that concludes our show for today. Make sure that you guys tune in right here on Fight TV or our YouTube channel or our website for our next show, which is scheduled for Wednesday morning. So I'll leave you with this. Make sure you tune in Wednesday morning. Same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, ciao, baby.